DOMA is hurting real people, and we want to keep the pressure on and make sure that the courts declare it unconstitutional.
The Attorney General recommended that the higher level of scrutiny be applied, and under that higher level of scrutiny, recommended that it be viewed as unconstitutional. The President reviewed that recommendation and concurred.
It's more and more promising and heartening that our government is saying that there's nothing in the Constitution against our marrying.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Jamaica's buggery laws slammed by Inter-American Commission, UN scorns Finland's denial of Russian lesbian mom's asylum, and 2011, the year that led to U.S. marriage equality. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
Keller.
And I'm Michael Taylor Gray.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending February 20th, 2021. The government of Jamaica is violating the constitutional rights of its LGBTQ citizens by maintaining its laws banning gay male sex, according to a ruling by the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights.
It's the Commission's first decision against anti-queer laws and could set a precedent for the entire Caribbean region. The Commission said that Jamaica's 1864 Offenses Against the Person Act infringed on the rights to humane treatment, equal protection before the law, privacy and freedom of movement, and residence as enshrined in the American Convention on Human Rights. It recommended that the law be repealed and that protections against homophobic discrimination be enacted. The decision was issued in September of 2019, but the commission kept it confidential until February 17th. Two Jamaican claimants who have been forced into exile were represented in the case by the legal team of the UK-based Human Dignity Trust. Gareth Henry had been active with JFLAG, the Jamaica Forum for Lesbians, All Sexuals, and Gays. He was violently attacked several times, culminating in 2008 with a harrowing scene when he was chased down by a mob of 200 and then beaten in front of his assailants by a policeman who had been called to help him. That same year, lesbian Simone Edwards was shot several times outside her home by a homophobic gang who were targeting her and her gay brother. Edwards lost a kidney and part of her liver. She sought asylum in the Netherlands. Henry received asylum in Canada and works for the Rainbow Railroad, helping other LGBTQ refugees. He told Reuters, "All my life, people have told me that who I am and who I love is wrong. Now, for the first time ever, I finally feel I am right." The Human Dignity Trust's Taya Braun called the ruling a highly significant step forward that must now accelerate the repeal of these stigmatizing and discriminatory laws. However, the Commission's rulings are not binding, and Jamaica has not followed any of its recommendations up to this point. The government has made no comment on the Commission's latest decision.
JFLAG has expressed its eagerness to dialogue with the country's leaders about how to relieve the oppression of LGBTQ people.
A lesbian couple seeking asylum in Finland to protect their son from persecution in their native Russia has had their claim vindicated by the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child. The committee found on February 17 that Finnish authorities had failed to adequately take the best interests of the child as a primary consideration when assessing their author's asylum request based on his mother's sexual orientation, and to protect him against a real risk of irreparable harm in case of return to the Russian Federation. The little boy had innocently outed his mother's when he was in kindergarten. This is around the time Russia's regional No Promo Homo laws against just about anything pro-LGBTQ were emerging, ahead of the passage of the national law in 2013. School staff started mistreating the child, berating his family, hitting him, allowing other children to bully him, even going so far as to give him food he was allergic to. When the youngster became anxious about school to the point of being suicidal, his mothers decided it was time to flee. Finland does offer asylum to those persecuted on the basis of sexual orientation. However, the discrimination and ostracism the child faced was not considered to rise to the level of persecution, and the request was denied. The family was forced to return to Russia. Their case was taken up by an army of international rights groups, rallied by the International Lesbian and Gay Association, or ILGA. ILGA World and ILGA Europe were joined by the International Commission of Jurists, Child Rights International Network, and the Network of European LGBTIQ Families Associations. The groundbreaking decision marks the first time a UN asylum-related case has involved a child at risk because of their mother's sexual orientation. Finland was found to have violated several articles of the Convention on the Rights of the Child and is obliged to provide an effective reparation, including adequate compensation. ILGA Europe's head of litigation, Arpi Avetisyan, called this an important decision, setting out necessary standards for the protection of children in LGBTI families who are at heightened risk of discrimination, especially in countries like Russia, where LGBTI people face stigmatization and hostilities in their everyday lives. ILGA World's statement expresses the hope that the family will be able to resettle in Finland to finally have a happy and safe life.
In other news from ILGA Europe, the organization's 10th annual review, released this week, warns that queer progress is increasingly fragile and should not be taken for granted. It stresses that the rise of the homophobic right is not limited to Poland and Hungary, and that verbal and physical violence against LGBTQ people is spreading across the region. ILGA Europe's review also finds that the COVID-19 pandemic has been just as threatening to the lives and rights of LGBTQ people as for other marginalized groups. Many have been forced to move back in with hostile families, and many have been overlooked by government relief programs. Ever-popular political scapegoating is now becoming rampant, and now a few religious leaders have pointed the coronavirus finger at sexual minority communities. ILGA Europe Executive Director Eveline Paradis says in the conclusion of the report, "With this review, our message to governments and institutions is that we have to acknowledge how fragile the situation is for LGBTI people across Europe and Central Asia. It is essential to take bold and decisive action at multiple levels so that the human rights of LGBTI people and all their diversity will continue to advance across the region, and the promise of equality will be experienced in their lived realities."
Fresh from his star turn as a House impeachment manager in the trial of former U.S. President Donald Trump, gay Rhode Island Representative David Cicilline reintroduced the Equality Act on February 18th. If enacted, the measure would add sexual orientation and gender identity to existing national civil rights laws and prohibit discrimination in employment, housing, education, public accommodations, and more. The bill is set for a vote in the House on February 23rd. It's expected to pass there, as it did in 2019. However, even with a new Democratic Party-controlled Senate, there are no guarantees. Ending the debate on the bill would still require 60 votes to break a filibuster. Equality Act proponents were hoping for the support of Utah Senator Mitt Romney to help draw other Republicans, but he has now announced his opposition. The famously Mormon ex-presidential candidate cited the bill's lack of what he considers strong religious liberty protections. He has also raised the misleading specter of the participation of transgender students in school sports, since the act would cover discrimination in education. LGBTQ advocates have no intention of giving in on that issue to possibly curry favor with anyone. National Women's Law Center transgender spokesperson Jillian Brandstetter told the Washington Blade, "The broad-based coalition organizations that support the Equality Act will proudly and loudly tell you that trans women are women. And if you apply an asterisk, if you buy into the idea that a trans woman athlete, if she wins, is apparently cheating, then you are applying an asterisk to the idea that she is a woman and therefore on equal footing with other women."
Finally, two reports out this week demonstrate why that kind of proud and loud support for trans people's lives is needed now more than ever. The first comes from Brazil, where President Jair Bolsonaro arrogantly flaunts his homophobia and transphobia. The advocacy group National Association of Transvestites and Transsexuals finds that at least 175 transgender people were murdered in 2020. That's one every 2 days. The slain were among the most marginalized groups. 78% were Black, 56% were young, and 72% were sex workers. Their deaths were among the most brazen killings. 7 out of 10 occurred in a public place. Their identities were more hidden, as many have been misgendered and deadnamed in police reports and the press. 2020 was the deadliest year for trans people in the U.S., and trans visibility suffered a similar demise. In their analysis of broadcast and cable TV news, the progressive research group Media Matters found less than an hour's worth of coverage of anti-transgender violence. The issue got 31 minutes on MSNBC and just another 10 minutes on CNN and Fox News combined. Broadcast networks ABC, CBS, and NBC managed to squeeze in a total of 13 minutes. Only 9 of the news stories about anti-trans violence mentioned a murdered trans person by name.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending February 20th, 2021. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is recording remotely during the COVID-19 emergency. It's written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio channel on YouTube. For This Way Out, I'm Melanie Keller. Stay healthy.
And I'm Michael Taylor Gray. Stay safe.
Hello, I'm Robbie Kaplan, the author of Then Comes Marriage, United States v. Windsor and the Defeat of DOMA. And you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
After decades of queer activists toiling in the civil rights kitchen, the table was ready to be set for marriage equality in the U.S. 10 years ago this week. So come back in time with me to February 2011 and recall the politics and the people of a pivotal moment in queer history.
With a legal showdown looming ahead, the Obama administration's momentous decision to change course in its handling of marriage equality litigation may herald the demise of more than the so-called Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA. Challenges to DOMA in both the First and Second Circuit Courts of Appeal finally forced the administration to face it, what U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder called in his February 23rd letter to House Speaker John Boehner, the question of whether laws regarding sexual orientation are subject to the more permissive standard of review, or whether a more rigorous standard, under which laws targeting minority groups with a history of discrimination are viewed with suspicion by the courts, should apply. Lambda Legal's John Davidson explained to KABC News how the administration answered that question.
They're saying we should be suspicious of laws that discriminate based on sexual orientation because they're likely to be based on prejudice rather than legitimate reasons.
Two of the cases involved were brought by Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders, or GLAAD. Civil Rights Project Director Mary Bonato described their arguments using examples of discrimination from the lives of some of the plaintiffs in a video made for GLAAD's website.
In July 2010, a federal district court judge in Massachusetts ruled that DOMA is unconstitutional insofar as the federal government is not recognizing the valid marriages of gay and lesbian couples in Massachusetts, and that there is no rational reason for stripping gay and lesbian married couples of all of the protections and also the responsibilities that come with marriage under federal law. GLAAD is keeping the pressure on by filing a second DOMA case, this time on behalf of 5 couples and 1 widower. These are folks who are married in their home states of Connecticut, Vermont, and New Hampshire, and once again we have found DOMA causing harm to married people. DOMA essentially requires that married gay and lesbian couples fall through the federal safety net that is supposed to be there for married folks. In this new case, we show just how broad DOMA is. So, for example, we represent two women from Vermont, one of whom is a postal worker, who applied for leave from work under the Family Medical Leave Act in order to take care of her spouse through knee surgery, as well as through other treatments that she needs relating back to an injury she had sustained in the military. And FMLA leave was denied. Linda DeForge was not able to be there for her spouse, Raquel Arden, in the same way other spouses can be there to take care of one another. And we represent a gentleman in Connecticut named Gerald Passaro. Jerry was with his partner, Tom, for 12 years. They married in the month that marriage became available in Connecticut, in November 2008. But unfortunately, 2 months later, Tom died of lymphoma. Tom had worked as a chemist for a company and had vested in the pension plan there. But because of DOMA, and only because of DOMA, Jerry can't get the survivor benefits on Tom's pension. And Jerry needs those benefits to live. We're representing Bradley Kleinerman and Flint Gary from Avon, Connecticut. Brad and Flint moved here from California because they love Connecticut and wanted to raise their three boys here. These are three boys who they adopted in California through the foster care system and have been devoted to them ever since. So devoted, in fact, that Flint gave up his career as first a police officer and then a teacher to be there and be a full-time dad. DOMA imposes essentially a tax penalty on them of over $1,500 a year because they are not allowed to file as married. That $1,500 a year is money that could be much better spent on their three sons. DOMA is hurting real people, and we want to keep the pressure on and make sure that the courts declare it unconstitutional and inoperative at the soonest possible date.
That was Civil Rights Project Director Mary Bonato in a video made for GLAAD's website. At a February 23rd White House briefing, Press Secretary Jay Carney answered questions about the administration's dramatic action regarding DOMA.
The president's position on the Defense of Marriage Act has been consistent. He has long opposed it as unnecessary and unfair. Distinct from that is the decision that is announced today, which was brought on by a court-imposed deadline by the Second Circuit that required a decision by the administration about whether or not this case should require heightened scrutiny, heightened constitutional review. Because this, unlike the other cases in other circuits, there was no precedent, no foundation upon which the administration could defend the Defense of Marriage Act in this case. Therefore, it had to basically make a positive assertion about its constitutionality. The Attorney General recommended that the higher level of scrutiny be applied, and under that higher level of scrutiny, deemed or recommended that it be viewed as unconstitutional. The president reviewed that recommendation and concurred. Therefore, again, because of the court-imposed deadline and the necessity that this decision be made, our announcement was made. The administration will not defend the Defense of Marriage Act in the Second Circuit. Furthermore, the president directed the Attorney General not to defend, because of the decision that it's not constitutional, defend the Defense of Marriage Act in any other circuit, in any other case. Let me also make clear, however, that the United States government will still be a party to those cases in order to allow those cases to proceed so that the courts can make the final determination about its constitutionality, and also so that other interested parties are able to take up the defense of the Defense of Marriage Act if they so wish. We recognize that, and respect that there are other points of view and other opinions about this. It is also important to note that the enforcement of the Defense of Marriage Act continues. The president is constitutionally bound to enforce the laws, and enforcement of the DOMA will continue.
I got a statement from Speaker Boehner's office on this issue. This is from their press office. While Americans want Washington to focus on creating jobs and cutting spending, the president will have to explain why he thinks now is the appropriate time to stir up a controversial issue that sharply divides the nation. What's your response to that?
Well, I would say simply, as I said in the beginning, that the administration had no choice. It was under a court-imposed deadline to make this decision. This case in the Second Circuit was unique in that it lacked the precedent upon which to defend the Defense of Marriage Act in the way that this administration had defended it in previous cases. It therefore required this decision on its constitutionality, and we had to act because of the deadline. We are also absolutely focused and committed on these key issues of economic growth and job creation, and we are now anticipating that this will move to the courts and the courts will decide.
That was White House Press Secretary Jay Carney talking to the media about the Obama administration's new position on the Defense of Marriage Act. MSNBC's Rachel Maddow diverted from her special live remote broadcast from a Lawrence, Kansas restaurant to get some analysis of the decision from University of Pennsylvania law professor Tobias Wolf, who served as legal advisor and LGBT policy chair for the Obama campaign in 2008.
Well, the Justice Department and the president have done two things. The first is about the constitutional challenges to the Defense of Marriage Act itself. And they have said that they are no longer going to defend the constitutionality of this discriminatory statute. That by itself is a big deal. But they've done something else which is arguably even more important. The president and the attorney general have concluded that as a general matter, anti-gay discrimination is presumptively unconstitutional, that when states or the government pass laws or adopt policies that disadvantage gay, lesbian, and bisexual Americans, that that action requires heightened or careful constitutional scrutiny because it is presumptively an unconstitutional form of discrimination. It's the first time that the U.S. government has ever placed its credibility and its power behind that position, and I think it's going to have an impact not just on the DOMA litigation, but on civil rights litigation all around the country.
That was University of Pennsylvania professor and former Obama campaign legal advisor Tobias Wolf. Edie Windsor is a lead plaintiff in one of the pending anti-DOMA lawsuits represented by the ACLU.
I brought my case against the government because I couldn't believe that our government would charge me $350,000 because I was married to a woman and not to a man. And my feelings about our president and the attorney general's realization that Section 3 of DOMA, that's the section that says marriage is only between one man and one woman, that is in fact unconstitutional. It's very meaningful. It's very meaningful to every same-sex couple. I feel very strongly about the teenagers who were falling in love for the first time without hope that they could get married. And this is different. This is different. It's more and more promising and heartening that our government is saying that there's nothing in the Constitution against our marrying. My only regret is that my late spouse, the Aspire, is not here to experience this. Everybody's been reassuring me today that she knows. Okay, and I hope so.
The Department of Justice's announcement growing out of Edie Windsor's and the other cases in the First and Second Circuit Appeals Courts is already being felt across the country. A California district court has given the department until February 28th to explain if and how it plans to defend DOMA in another pending case.
There's nothing so international as a powerful idea. I'm Edmund White. It is the overwhelming international flavor of the lesbian and gay rights movement that has proved so powerful over the past couple of decades. And one radio program has been there to record, to inform, and to entertain. So please keep listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine on this station.
An even bigger breakthrough came just 15 months later, as This Way Out's Greg Gordon reported in May of 2012.
You say you want an evolution. Well, you know.
I said I've been going through an evolution.
Don't you know it's gonna be all right?
There were reports that Obama had actually evolved a few months ago, and a formal announcement of his change of heart was expected a few weeks before the Democratic Party convention in September. But comments by Vice President Joe Biden on the May 6th broadcast of NBC TV's Meet the Press changed that timetable.
Look, I just think that... The good news is that as more and more Americans come to understand what this is all about is a simple proposition. Who do you love? Who do you love? And will you be loyal to the person you love? And that's what people are finding out is what all marriages at their root are about. Whether they're marriages of lesbians or gay men or heterosexuals. And quite frankly, I don't see much of a distinction beyond that.
The president and his advisors apparently decided that his hand had been forced. In what was described as a hastily arranged interview with ABC TV's Robin Roberts on May 9th, Obama became the first sitting U.S. president to embrace civil marriage equality.
I've been going through an evolution on this issue, and I had hesitated on gay marriage, in part because I thought civil unions would be sufficient. But I have to tell you that over the course of several years, as I talk to friends and family and neighbors, when I think about members of my own staff who are in incredibly committed monogamous relationships, same-sex relationships, who are raising kids together, at a certain point, I've just concluded that for me personally, it is important for me to go ahead and affirm that I think same-sex couples should be able to get married. Some of this is also generational. You know, when I go to college campuses, sometimes I talk to college Republicans who think that I have terrible policies on the economy or on foreign policy, but are very clear that when it comes to same-sex equality sexual orientation, that they believe in equality.
To President Barack Obama, we love you and thank you.
The Obama 2012 evolution started a chain reaction. The Supreme Court struck down the section of DOMA that had been in question the following year in the Windsor ruling, and marriage equality finally and truly became the law of the land with the Obergefell ruling in 2015. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Melanie Keller and Michael Taylor Gray, produced by Brian DeShazer. Sean Chapin performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, a bequest from Christopher David Trentum, and donors Christopher Matthews and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WRFI Ithaca, New York, to BAY Byron Bay, New South Wales, KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.